So page 19, back to a few sentences. Like the Negro, and because many are Negroes, the slum dweller has turned on in the TV age. He is confused, fragmented, and deprived of his tribal identity when pushed into a neat box for a home, home in quotes. He will fight for his threatened image. See Side Probe 3, page 32. So we go to Side Probe 3. The slum has become the avant-garde in the hippie age. So remember, the hippies are moving into the slums, and the slums are being torn down for the black people. Same thing as the east going west and the west going east. He always has slum or slum dweller in quotes. The slum, quote unquote, has become the avant-garde in the hippie age. The reason is that the slum, a la Dickens or La Boheme, offers a feast to all of our senses. It is not the tidy, specialized visual world of the 19th century bureaucrat. Housing is corporate clothing, and the slum bureaucrats offer starched Quaker costumes to the poor who have already experienced the full software treatment of contemporary mini-skirted contours. So the blacks, who are already tribal, are forced to go visual. That's the Chinese who are tribal, forced to go Western. And the suburban white kids who are grow up literate are forced to go slum and multi-sensuous. That's the counterculture. That's Walter Bowert and East Village Other down in St. Mark's Place and 2nd Avenue, East 8th Street. Visual goes black and black goes visual. You get it? You get that?
Yeah.
Housing is corporate clothing, and the slum bureaucrats offer starched Quaker costumes to the poor who have already experienced the full software treatment of contemporary mini-skirted contours. McLuhan said the miniskirt is not a dress, it's a tribal costume. But he had a joke in the Dewline cards. With the miniskirt, we don't have to wait for the wind.
He's a jokester, man. He's really a jokester.
Yeah. And what was that? Reread this thing here. Like the Negro, and because many are Negroes, the slum dweller has turned on in the TV age. He is confused, fragmented, and deprived of his tribal identity when pushed into a neat box for a home. He will fight for his threatened image. And that's, you know, that's when all the riots started in the cities in the late 60s.
That's a sharp observation. Sharp observation.
Yeah. Complete patterns, showing a whole process.
Yes.
And McLuhan would say, when you see a pattern, that's mythic awareness. And what we call myth is actually stories of complex activities made into a concise little pattern. It's not spelled out in details like later printed press prose. Here's a good one, printed press prose. So on page 20, McLuhan says, is this new violence, capitalized, underlined, is this new violence then restricted only to the Negro, the slum dweller, the child, and the adolescent? Big letters. Of course not. To repeat once again, so here I'm in a new page and half of it's repeated. Very economical, very minimalist, McLuhan's doing here. To repeat once again, in a world of very rapid technological change, everyone's sense of identity is shattered over and over again. Shattered is written like a ladder going down. Now, did he say before, the sense of identity is not only threatened but shattered? But this time he says everyone's sense of identity is threatened, is shattered over and over again. Page 21. It has been estimated, for example, that 3 times the population of Chicago leaves O'Hare Airport annually. 3 times the population of Chicago leaves the airport. This is merely a vivid way of saying that the high mobility of population today makes the existence of neighborhoods almost vestigial. This is merely a vivid way of saying that the high mobility of population today makes the existence of neighborhoods almost vestigial. We hear McLuhan talking about that on the Tony Schwartz recordings. No community anymore. And that leads to violence in all forms, all over the place. Remember, this is a memo to the executives about violence. Page 22. But at the same time that there is this great acceleration of population movement and accompanying decay of neighborhood, the distances, if not the differences, between groups and individuals alike are being eliminated by the speed and ease of transport. And it says, crunch, exclamation mark. The implosion becomes a crunch, C-R-U-N-C-H, with hyphens between each letter. And it says, see side probe number 4, page 33. So look at that. But at the same time that there's this great acceleration of population movement accompanying decay of neighborhood, that's expanding outward the distances, if not the differences, between groups and individuals, because they're all going discarnate, angelic. These differences alike are being eliminated by the speed and ease of transport. So there's a lot of low visual differences as the people move kinetically around the world, across the world. So we go to the sidebar. Side probe number 4. Sidebar number 4. Minute. Still looking, just a minute. So, page 33, side probe number 4. Page 33, side probe number 4. The advertising world reflects the simultaneous pulling apart and pushing together of our time. See, that's tactility, going in both directions, inner and outer. It's like, think of the heart, the image of the heart pumping, the systole and diastole, the blood going in and the blood pumped out. So the advertising world reflects the simultaneous pulling apart and pushing together of our times. Why am I getting an echo? Did you go on speakerphone, Bert?
No, I'm on mute.
Your microphone
I'm on mute. Pumping.
Okay. All right. The advertising world reflects the simultaneous pulling apart and pushing together of our times. That means enhanced decentralization and enhanced centralization. Enhanced eye, enhanced ear inside the global tactile interface of the global theater. An American Airlines ad tells us, quote, when you fly with Raquel Welch, you want to sit as close as possible. Then it says, however, when crossing the Atlantic Ocean, there's little time to get acquainted. So an American Airlines ad tells us, when you fly with Raquel Welch, you want to sit as close as possible. Then McLuhan says, but yes, you're coming together, but there's a pulling part. However, when crossing the Atlantic River, there's little time to get acquainted with Raquel. Okay? Isn't that sad? Isn't that depressing? The tragedy. I sat beside Raquel Welch in first class, and all I got was this T-shirt. Sexy T-shirt, thanks to Susanna, but that's all I got. Did Roxy fall asleep? You fall asleep? Bitch.
No, I was bitch. Just didn't hear my laugh.
You're on speakerphone. We don't know what you're saying.
Okay, replay.
Yeah, replay
I
that.
I was laughing, but you didn't hear it because I was muted.
Yeah, okay, good. All right, well, don't mute yourself. We're here to get as many laughs and enjoy them as possible.
I'm laughing too, Bob.
Good, good. Everybody's laughing. I'm the last to know. So, okay, we're going to page 23. Paradoxically, then, as people liquidate neighborhoods by speed-up, including slum clearances, that liquidates neighborhoods, the entire globe becomes a neighborhood of interpenetrating cultures and frontiers in which everyone is expected to be on an intimate family basis. Of course, that leads to political correctness. In fact, however, the loss of identity that goes with such speed-up causes even more violence than the old proximities. So everybody gets squashed together, crunch, has to be pretend they understand everybody, and yet, inevitably, violence increases. That's why people start to get religion. You know, Mark Stallman says we're retrieving religion. Religion, that's just everybody going fundamental out of fear, out of sheer fear of somebody blowing you up. Because the spaces have been pulled out between people.
That was why I asked when that was that tape made, because it made me think, like, is this guy, this cannot be, like, something recent. But he was talking about retrieving religion. I was like, my goodness, now. Puts another perspective on where he's, his where he is
yeah.
from Lost from Bob. My goodness.
Yeah. you don't make the, there are two people lost in hell because they didn't make the jump to Eindom, and they could have got into it back 6 years ago, 7 years ago. But there are 10 interviews, dialogues between me and Harold. They're hilarious. So I'll read that again. Paradoxically, then, as people liquidate neighborhoods by speed-up, including slum clearances, the entire globe becomes a neighborhood of interpenetrating cultures and frontiers in which everyone is expected to be on an intimate family basis. In fact, however, the loss of identity that goes with such speed-up causes even more violence than the old proximities. So you see, McLuhan's got a satellite view of the planet. He's looking at these massive environmental interactions.
Yes.
These media landscapes.
And it's, I found it interesting in the, I don't know if it was the third, I think maybe the third, how he had a satellite view of, he compared the slum dweller with the Algerian women and how he showed the parallels.
Yeah. He's scanning the globe.
Yes. Yes.
He's not painting flowers. He's not painting abstract geometrical forms. He's not dripping paint on a canvas like Jackson Pollock. He's taking where we actually live from the satellite level and scanning the whole multi-level landscapes. That's the new poetry. Not Ginsberg running around fucking the Dalai Lama and then yelling and screaming and playing a little harmonium. Ginsberg, Pink, McLuhan, Dobbstown. Page 24. We shout, he has shout in quotes, we shout or raise our voices at foreigners, or under conditions in which we feel we're not being heard or understood, because we feel our own identity is diminished in such situations. Shouting is a kind of violence intended to establish or affirm our threatened identity. War is its extreme form, a sort of macroscopic gesticulation. And you look at the same time as this article comes out, the book War and Peace in the Global Village is coming out, and you'll see a picture of an ape, a photograph in War and Peace and Globe Village of an ape screaming, and beside it, McLuhan talks about macroscopic gesticulation. Not microscopic, macroscopic. So, we shout or raise our voices at foreigners or under conditions in which we feel we are not being heard or understood because we feel our own identity is diminished in such situations. Shouting is a kind of violence intended to establish or affirm our threatened identity. War is its extreme form, a sort of macroscopic gesticulation. So the attack on Vietnam was a massive shouting by the military Pentagon, military hardware world. And it was confused because it was broadcast into everybody's living room. So the soldiers came home unwelcome. They didn't know they were being broadcast while fighting in the far back yards of the world. That's what McLuhan said. All hardware wars are fought in the backyards of the world. Korea, Vietnam, British Guiana, Dobbstown. Now, here's Beverly. Beverly's here waiting to ask her health question. Yes, Ian spoke you up, Beverly.
The backyard thing makes it sound childish.
It is. They're tantrums,
yes,
by cultures. McLuhan in the War and Peace and Global Village, she says, this book offers feed forward, not feedback, feed forward, to help clarify the spastic situations in our global theater. The spastic communication going on between the Pentagon and Ho Chi Minh. So we come to page 25. Advertising consists almost entirely of this kind of shouting. Ads are all good news and need much bad news or real news to make them palatable. Quote, the lass with the delicate air, unquote, has no place in the ad world. A man with a subtle, quote, air of distinction, unquote, might serve to enhance communication in a well-established milieu where everybody shares common acquaintances and the same modulation of sensory experiences. But such je ne sais quoi would be wasted on the technological frontier of any new world or new culture. On the frontier, by definition, people have left their identities behind and are simply eyeball to eyeball. That's in quotes. They have to prove themselves every minute. Graciousness fades from such a world. You know, people have been complaining there's no more decency. Well, McLuhan was predicting, explaining why 50 years ago. I read that again. Advertising consists almost entirely of this kind of shouting. Ads are all good news and need much bad news, or real bad news, real news, to make them palatable. The delicate image, the lass with the delicate air, unquote, has no place in the ad world, the world of shouting. A man with a subtle, quote, air of distinction, unquote, might serve to enhance communication in a well-established milieu, it's like a neighborhood, where everybody shares common acquaintances and the same modulation of sensory experiences. Just saying, describing the neighborhood like that is too slow. Anybody live in a world of common acquaintances and modulation of sensory experiences on the same level? No. But we do share the same bodies. But such je ne sais quoi would be wasted on the technological frontier of any new world or any new culture. On the frontier, by definition, people have left their identities behind and are simply eyeball to eyeball. They have to prove themselves every minute. Graciousness fades from such a world. So Thomas Pynchon in his book, what is it? Forget, came out in 97, something about dark or dry, whatever that title is. A lot of it's placed in the Wild West in 1895 to 1900, and the violence in these makeshift Western towns is really excellently described by Pynchon. Against the Day, that's the name of the book, Against the Day. So, that last page was page 25. There's 34 pages. So on page 26, again, minimalist, the whole page has three words. In summary, then, dot, dot, dot. I mean, McLuhan, was he lazy? Was he on the go, didn't have time to do much? Page 27, violence is a quest for identity inspired by technical innovations. So that's the big conclusion. Page 28. Just to the degree that there is an erosion of private image and identity, so there will occur in all members of the population who have retained any of the old Western or private image, an involuntary outburst of psychic violence and alienation. Asterisk, down the bottom, seaside probe number 5 on page 34. Read that again. Just to the degree that there is an erosion of private image and identity, so there will occur in all members of the population who have retained any of the old Western or private image, an involuntary outburst of psychic violence and alienation. You guys ever seen the movie Shampoo? Warren Beach, 1968?
Yes.
Or so? You know, he's a hairdresser in Beverly Hills or Hollywood, and he's dealing with these this identity crisis all over the place. In the summer of 68 with the Nixon election, all these women going nuts in different ways. That's showing what McLuhan's describing. The chaotic identity quest by all kinds of people in Hollywood, if you remember that movie. Remember, he's forced to fuck anything that moves. They're all running to embrace him, and he's the hairdresser, right? And he becomes this disheveled, confused guy by the end of the movie, right?
Yes. Yes.
And it's a well-paced movie for its time, but, you know, ridiculously slow now.
Yes.
I can't even, I'm not tempted to go back and look at old movies. They I think they move too slow. I don't know if I have time to watch that. And the patterns they show me, I can get better patterns through this McLuhan talking or remembering than whatever pattern, you know, John Huston's trying to show me or some director. Other than it's a travel, you know, you travel to the 40s and watch Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn run around someplace. It's sort of nice if you get time. It's like a slow drug.
Hey, Bob, when you watch the movies and on television and everything, do you, like, figure it out after, like, 15 minutes of watching it?
No.
The angle?
No, because I'm not thinking about it. Carolyn does that all the time. She watches and tries to figure things out. I don't even know what's going on. I'm just looking for where they fucking mention my name.
Mm.
I'm extreme user's content. I'm just seeing where, okay, what did they rip off for me this time? I don't even give a fuck about the movie. I don't even believe in their conclusion or violence. I don't even care about their problems. It's unhappy people having a problem. You know, I don't need this shit. But I want to see what has JW been telling them about me? That's what I got to find out. Now, how's that for a unique way to consume movies? Tell that to a director. He'd say, that fucking Bob guy is fucking nuts. I don't know this JW guy. I never heard of JW. I certainly didn't talk to JW and put Carol Dean's name in there because of him. JW, no fucking way. This guy gets on the radio and talks about it for 18 hours. Like, who are these nuts to listen to this Bob guy? He's got some southern cracker comes on and pretends he's wise and talks too fast.
Oh,
that's what we're up against.
Entertainment. This is the new entertainment.
That's right.
Oh, you know.
It's the most exaggerated megalomania. We got two kinds of megalomania. Bob, the human form, and I on the non-physical form. and we blame each other. Why do we have an earthquake? Oh, that's Bob, says Ion. And I say, no, it was Ion. somebody dropped something? What causes that noise? Bert, did you cause that noise?
No.
Oh, shoot, I did. I'll mute again.
What'd you do, drop something?
My boxes.
Okay. I opened a drawer. Yeah, I'm moving around.
Okay.
I'm muting.
All right, so we're going to... Okay, so we did... This outburst, involuntary outburst of psychic violence and alienation. I mean, right in the family, you know, the kids are... Was it in Shampoo? What was that movie? Around 68. Where the daughter brings home the hippie boyfriend, and the hippie boyfriend's all wild-eyed and paranoid. What? Maybe it was Shampoo. There was some movie around that time. It was a good... You know, the boyfriend is some college dropout guy who's like on drugs all day long and is totally paranoid to walk into the framed, puny suburban living room. You know? Too much visual space. The psychic violence and alienation running rampant. So we go to side probe 5 on page 34. It was pretty powerful reading this stuff back then. I mean, the guy had the big perspective, right? It's interesting. Side probe number 5. It is our conditioning that is wrong. That's in capital letters. It is our conditioning that is wrong. We still think of goals, in quotes, and identity, in quotes, as some 19th century literate version of privacy and separateness. Years ago, Eddington, I think he was a poet critic, pointed out that if all spaces were removed from between the particles of our bodies, our total substance would scarcely be visible under a microscope. We've heard Ion do a variation on that. If all spaces were removed from between the particles of our bodies, our total substance would scarcely be visible under a microscope. Is this not the kind of microscopic togetherness, in quotes, togetherness, that we are now creating technologically? By removing all the spaces between all the people on this planet, may not proximity become a mere merging into a tribal cloud of unknowing? Ooh, look at that. Tribal cloud of unknowing. Where have we heard that before? It's almost like Ion picks these words knowing that Bob will find it so that I get blamed in the end for fucking being the source of this revolution and second coming. Right? Right, girls? Gals? Gals, are you with us on this? The black caucus is having a good time. What about the white caucus of lesbians? How you doing?
But Bob,
yeah,
that,
just like
which just
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish,
yeah, listen to this. Just like a woman in a store, Madeline's going around looking in drawers, looking for old knitting apparatus and condoms and whatever the fuck they women look for in their drawers, you know. Walking around, multitasking.
Bob, I'm cleaning up the mess that happened while I was waiting for the angels to fix it for me. I finally realized I have to do
a year,
it.
A year of mess waiting for the slum clearance.
Yeah.
You're clearing your slum.
Yeah.
There's no goddamn angel going to come to an amateur who doesn't even know how to fucking talk to an angel. You guys have an exaggerated sense of your own learning speed. I mean, Roxy's been waiting for about 2 months now to go to heaven and have all these angels choir her way into the lofty world of ascension. It's going to take a little more work than listening to me and reading a couple of McLuhan articles, okay? This ascension is not easy.
I thought maybe I just had to believe it hard enough.
Yeah, I know. And mumble it. And mumble inconsequentials to angels. Make sure it's not in English.
Yeah, I tried
saying
it.
Well, admittedly, Ion did tell you all that, didn't he? He did say it was easy.
They did. That's why I'm suing Ion. Fuck him.
I'm suing Ion. He made it too easy. Nothing happened. Did you... Where are you, Roxy? Did you fall asleep again? Are you on mute? Roxy's afraid to come forward.
Yeah.
All these 40-year-olds, they're all in their 40s, Bert. They're all little girls, for fuck's sake. I mean, they're not even half as old as I've been here. I'm twice as old and been here twice as long as their little 46-year-old lives, you know. They're little girls. They, okay, we're going to retrieve, we're going to go back and review this.
Well, how old is Birch?
I don't know.
Birch's about 50. He doesn't know, that's right, he's learned his lesson. He doesn't know.
I don't know.
Birch's about 52, maybe. I mean, maybe he's 47, but, I mean, you're all in your 40s. We somehow have capital market, mid-40s. All those born in 61, 63. Is that? No, that's 70s. Yeah, but you're all tending to, you're all born in the, yeah, what?
67.
Yeah, Roxy's 68. Bert's probably about then.
Nope, 59.
I'm older than Roxy.
Yeah, by a couple months, yeah. So Bert's 59, so he's 55. I was close. I said 52. He's 55. And he's 56. Which reminds me, we didn't go over the notes yet. I got to go look at the... The greatest McLuhan scholar. So you go to Ion and Bob... And you go down to the bottom, Okay, for August 68, in the notes, we just have tactility as heart, pulling apart, pushing together. Systole, diastole. Oh, no, it's a little, goes up a bit. Graciousness. Remember, something was gracious. We saw that. War as macroscopic gesticulation. We did that one. Caval Graves. I'm not sure what that is. Causal. Anyway, systole, diastole is the heart movement. Pulling apart, pushing together. That's tactility as the heart, August 68. Can you guys see what the words are below graciousness? Causal? Cavell? It looks like the word discover. D-I-S-C-O-V-E-R. Causal discover. Could, there was a guy, an art his professor named Richard Cavell, who wrote a book on McLuhan. Could it be his stuff? Cavell.
Are you on Ian and Bob?
Yes, looking at, you go down to the bottom of the page where it has the red topics, and you'll see at the very bottom the greatest McLuhan scholar. Just click on that. Hard, oh, I've got hard hats. So some of the points I brought up, hard hats, Civil War in America, systole, diastole, heart as symbol of tactility. Graciousness, war as macroscopic gesticulation. Well, we're okay. Not many notes there. Nothing mysterious. Okay, so reading this last bit, it says, just to the degree that there is an erosion of private image and identity, and there certainly was, there will occur in all members of the population, all members who have retained any of the old Western or private image, in other words, hadn't taken ayahuasca, hadn't fucking taken LSD, hadn't taken grass, in them becomes involuntary outbursts of psychic violence and alienation, and that would be the hard hats, the 96-970, the hard hats in New York beating up the hippies. So McLuhan predicts this new level of violence that's going to enter into American life. You guys know about the hard hats, the construction workers who would attack the hippie demonstrations
I was just fumbling for the mute button to ask you, what are the hard hats? I never heard of them.
That's the guys in the round construction helmets. And a lot of those, if you see a lot of Hollywood movies back then, the hard hats are construction companies which are run by mafias, and so the mafia guys would get these construction guys and beat up the liberals. That would be a repeating theme in the newsy topical movies of the day. And you'll see it on my chart. I've got hard hats attacking the yippies. I think that's in the Thompson quadrant. So the side probe, it is our conditioning that is wrong. So McLuhan doesn't usually make a value judgment, but he's getting exasperated, or I don't know who did this. It is our conditioning that is wrong. In other words, our definition of where we're at. We still think of goals and identity as some 19th century literate version of privacy and separateness. Yet we're invisible. Years ago, Eddington pointed out that if all spaces were removed from between the particles of our bodies, our total substance would scarcely be visible under a microscope. Is this not the kind of microscopic togetherness that we are now creating technologically? By removing all the spaces between all the people on this planet, may not proximity become a mere merging into a tribal cloud of unknowing? And then you can see the Android meme replayed that with the Web 2.0. You could say that we're not bodies becoming subatomic. When the chip body showed up, we were subatomic becoming quark tunes, which is six characteristics, right? Charm, some strangeness, these six qualities of the quark. I call it the quark tune. So people are, I'm walking by quark tunes. when I walk by the people on the beach looking at their global membrane made very tiny. Become a mere merging into a tribal cloud of unknowing. That should tell you something. So then we go to, that's page 33, 34, but we still have page 29 to do, because on page 30 is the first side probe, number one. So on page 29, so we saw on page 28. That was the involuntary outburst of psychic violence and alienation. 29. So McLuhan ends with an assassination. Robert Kennedy suggested arms for Israel. The Jordanian Sirhan Sirhan accepted it as a personal threat from a guy down the street, as it were, to his personal and family life and identity. Kennedy spoke from a spacious and underpopulated world of highly fragmented individualist culture, but he was also speaking straight into the ear of a highly tribalized corporate culture that was electrically adjacent to him. That's McLuhan's explanation of the murder of Robert Kennedy. On June 4th, 1968, my father's birthday, the same day Andy Warhol got shot by Valerie Suckass. What was her name? Solanas? Of course, that's the heroes of Roxy's generation. The kids, the radical communists, the disenchanted, melancholy, Illuminati bitch communists who went to school with their 90s lefty professors all celebrated Valerie Solanas. So that's why she laughed. Right? Am I right? Am I wrong?
I don't know who she is.
Well, why'd you laugh? Just sounded funny, right? It's the rhythms.
No,
the rhythms.
No,
because you said suck ass instead of Solanas.
Oh, suck ass, okay.
No. I was visualizing Andy Warhol being shot with his wig and all.
That's typical of the Generation Xers or whatever. What is it? Yeah, she's Generation X. They can handle all kinds of violent images. Let's read that again. It's pretty good. Robert, so you've got, you know, Kennedy thinks he's in a literate culture, and he's speaking, and he thinks his message goes to faraway places visually. He doesn't know this microphone has Sirhan right inside the microphone, electrically imploded environment. So Robert Kennedy suggested arms for Israel. The Jordanian Sirhan, standing right beside Robert Kennedy, accepted it as a personal threat from a guy down the street, as it were, a personal threat to his personal and family life and identity, because, you know, Israelis could attack the Palestinians, the Jordanians, rather, Sirhan Sirhan. Kennedy spoke from a spacious and underpopulated world, lots of spaces between individuals, everybody has their own apartment, of highly fragmented individualist culture. But he was also speaking straight into the ear of a highly tribalized corporate culture that was electrically adjacent to him, right beside him. Page 29, then you have the name Marshall McLuhan underlined. And we have finished the sermon for today.
Hallelujah.
It was a good one. When you call me that, you smile.